Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm thrilled to introduce you to Corey Lynn Green, a bluegrass musician born and raised in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. Corey writes and reflects the secrets and stories of life in a small holler town, drawing from her deep roots in rural Appalachia as she walks down a path of self-discovery through personal heartbreak, rebellion, hardship, joy, and acceptance. Corey Lynn stays true to the strength and grit that defines her personal story and others living the mountain way. As an emerging artist in the music world, Corey Lynn is continuing to receive national recognition, including placing third in the 2022 Tucson Folk Festival Songwriting Competition. In 2022, she received a grant from Harrisonburg-Rockingham County Arts Council of the Valley to perform her Appalachian story locally on stage before a sold-out audience. Her debut album, Blow Away, was released just this last May. Welcome to the show, Corey. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Me too, because you and I are PEO sisters.
That's right.
We know of each other.
Yes.
But we keep missing the meetings because you're busy with the music and I'm busy with the comedy, and they meet during the day.
That's
right. And then I reached out to you to do this podcast interview, and we're actually meeting each other on Zoom virtually for the first time. And this is awesome.
I'm so excited about it. I'm so glad to finally meet you.
Same here. I've heard all good things from all the sisters that brag about you all the time, and I just love you. So it's just great. This is amazing.
I'm very lucky to have their support. It means a lot.
Yeah, they're a special group of women. And for those laughers out there that don't know what PEO is and never heard of it, PEO stands for Philanthropic Education Organization. And I know that is a mouthful, but what that means is it's a women's organization to help women further their education and reach their highest goals and aspirations, in summary. So that's what we're a part of. And here we are, two sisters on a podcast today talking about Corey Green's music. So let's into it. What do you say?
Sounds great.
Okay. You have a great story. I mean, I want to get a little bit of your background and share that with the laughers. You were 14 when your mom married a bluegrass musician, and your family moved to a small house at the base of the Shenandoah National Park, where your stepfather hosted a bluegrass jam every Friday night. That's quite the cadence.
Yes, it is.
I must say. And was this your first introduction to bluegrass?
Yes, it really was. Before I met him, we moved around quite a lot, but mostly into the county. Sometimes I lived in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Sometimes I lived in county. But when I met him at 14 was the first time that I really got in touch with bluegrass music, and also just living the Appalachia way in general.
Wow. That's pretty amazing to have that experience with music every Friday. That had to be super fun. Was it super fun?
It was super fun, and it was super informative. I mean, I was interested in the music right away, and it felt like I was sort of getting a window into a really specific way of communication between musicians. Anything can change in a bluegrass jam, and you have to kind of be on your toes and watching and waiting. And there are a lot of surprises and a lot of amazing moments that happen just in the homes of people who are in love with bluegrass.
Wow. I mean, I would say a music lover, not a music connoisseur. I just know that it sounds good. And I don't know that you guys are playing around. I think you've been practicing for months when I'm listening to it.
Yeah. It seems that way. And that's because the caliber of musicians, especially the bluegrass musicians that I grew up around, they're that good. Bluegrass festival that you go to, you'll see the people who have big names on the stage. And that's wonderful. And they're incredible musicians who have made their way. But if you go into the parking lots of these bluegrass festivals and you walk around, you'll hear bluegrass that you can't imagine. And it's just coming out of groups of friends that play together during the week or families that have been playing together through generations. And the real music is in the parking lot. And it's an amazing discovery.
What? See, again, this is why we do this podcast. I didn't even know any of that. That's incredible. Yes. So you can jam out in the parking lot, it sounds
like. Yeah, it's kind of the main reason people like me go. We go to listen to amazing music and to listen to the people that we look up to who've made it in music. But really, we're there to play music. And no matter what has happened to me through this musical experience, most of the people that I play with still just say, I just want to play music. I just want to play music. And we don't really care where or when or how. But if we get to play music, we just find a lot of joy.
Oh, the passion is strong in you all. That's incredible.
Yes.
You must have had a few influential musicians that you looked up to along the way. Who have been some of your favorites growing up?
So it's a great question. And I have a little bit of a, I don't want to say it's complicated, but I am a music listener and was introduced to bluegrass at 14. So I have a life before bluegrass. And I mean, something that's significant that I can remember is finding an old metal tin of records that was in an attic somewhere and pulling it out and having a record player and seeing the Birds and the Beatles and the Monkees and sort of this genre and really getting into playing those records. And then because of my age and my sister's age, getting our first albums for us was, you know, Prince, Purple Rain and Girls Just Want to Have Fun and Michael Jackson, Thriller. And also in some of the places that I lived, you know, rap was sort of beginning and starting. And my brother was super into listening to rap music. And we were listening to the Beastie Boys and A Tribe Called Quest. And so I had this huge group of musical tastes. And then when I sort of got into bluegrass, I found myself really understanding music as a musician for the first time, and really hearing stories that I could understand related to me. So it's a long list, but I could say, you know, Joni Mitchell as a songwriter, Bob Dylan as a songwriter. But if I'm thinking about bluegrass and who influenced me there the most, then I would be thinking of like Del McCurry, Sam Bush. And these are guys that I just grew up listening to, Scruggs, Earl, you know, these were the musicians that were on the records all the time in my home growing up. And so there's just this underlying like story and sound that comes from just the great players. And most of them are still around playing music. So I'm really lucky. I've gotten to see a bunch of them live.
You have listened to quite a range of music.
Which is very unusual, especially for this type of music. Most people have been doing it their whole lives, and that's what they're into, and that's their root. And I do feel like it's my root. It's the music I understand the most and tells my story the best. But I have a long line of other music that I really appreciate. I appreciate almost every music. And that includes music that I don't listen to that often, like pop or regular country that's on the radio. But I think there's some value in all of it. And there's always going to be that one songwriter or that one song that just captures you. And it doesn't matter what the genre is.
Mm. I love your whole list. And Prince stuck out to me. He was my first rock concert that I ever went to.
That was the first drive-in movie that I ever went to was Prince Purple Rain. And I remember being in the back of a pickup truck watching. And I still have my Prince Purple Rain album.
Oh,
yeah, I was a big fan.
Me too. That was incredible. Now, does his influence in terms of his sound or process, do all these eclectic people you listen to, does that seep into your music in the songwriting part or the music part?
Yes. I mean, Prince was a master, so there could just be no comparison. He was so creative.
Yes.
And I would say that I am influenced by all of this, which is why I'm often not called a bluegrass musician. I'm supported by a bluegrass family and by bluegrass friends, and the people who play in my band are bluegrass musicians. But when it comes down to calling me a genre, people shy away from that a little bit because I am so heavily influenced by all these genres. And also my focus is in the songwriting. So it doesn't matter to me what the genre is. If I hear something amazing that touches me, then that is the song I'm going to listen to no matter what it is. And so I think it's the songwriters themselves and less about the music that I've been sort of swept away with and wanted to become more like as I began my own journey with songwriting.
That's really great. So did I misspeak in the intro when I called you a bluegrass musician?
Well, maybe, but people do call me that because okay. I play the banjo. And so it's really hard to separate me playing the banjo and me having a bluegrass influence. And I love bluegrass music. I wish I was a bluegrass musician, but it's not the way I write. So most people, when I try to find a category, which is challenging for me, put me in the folk, bluegrass, Americana category, somewhere in there.
Yes, I noticed on YouTube with the album that you had released this year, Blow Away. In fact, those three were listed, the folk, Americana, and Appalachia.
Yes.
Is there a difference between the three? Can you speak on that?
Yes. And so I think what most people end up calling me is an Appalachian folk singer. And there's a reason for that, because I'm not playing traditional bluegrass songs and I'm not playing the banjo in a traditional bluegrass way. Folk music, I think, speaks to more of the way that I songwrite. And, you know, I'm often writing about the hardships that have occurred for me. When people meet me, they say, wow, you're such a positive person and you're so happy. And I am. I feel great most of the time. But what I've done with the darker parts or the harder parts of my life is I've put them down on paper. And so I also like to be not too literal when I write. And I like to create stories within the stories. And I like to use language to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, but not exactly what it is. And so that's more of a folk way of writing. Americana is really, it's a huge genre. And sometimes people just don't know where to put me. And that can be really difficult in the music world because they want to put you on the Americana radio station, on the folk radio station, on the bluegrass radio station. And if you're just not quite, you know, hitting those marks, especially for the listeners, it can become a real challenge. So it's important to find out who are you and what are you writing for? So folk, Appalachian folk was a really good title for me because I come from the Appalachian Mountains and I grew up listening not just to bluegrass, but what we would call in my family, mountain music. And when my dad hears me playing or singing or writing, he says, you are a mountain music singer. And so that would be someone more like Ola Bell Reed. Ola Bell Reed, I grew up listening to her and she does a song called I've Endured. And I've sang that song in bluegrass a million times. And she's got a really mountain voice. There's nothing, it's not about beauty. It's about telling the story in a way that will make someone believe. It's raw, it's gritty, and it really comes from that place of like desperation and that place of like living up in the holler and just being able to sing it out. And so that's what makes me separate, and that's what separates all those genres as well. And so I'm in a real small category, especially of women that are singing in a very specific way, including singing ballads where I just sing and I don't do any instrumentation, which was the way that songs and stories were passed down through generations and on to me. So I've written a lot of modern ballads where I'm just singing, and it's a very raw, very real stopping kind of thing. Beautiful isn't the word you would use, but interesting and strange and different and curious. Those are all better words.
I hear a lot of your music where the essence and thread of it really is coming through your songwriting, it sounds like to me.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful segue into this next question, is when did you start writing your own songs and did it come easy to you?
Yeah, I've always been writing. I've always been writing, and I needed writing so much. I had a, you know, like so many of us, a challenging upbringing with all kinds of ins and outs. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, and, you know, we lived in difficult neighborhoods, both in the city and in the country, you know, and there were differences in how that felt. But I was always writing because I could always just have a journal and write it down. I could always write and tell a story better than I could communicate in any other way. If I was having a problem, I could write you a letter and I could say, here's the letter, but I couldn't necessarily speak it with my voice. The voice came later, you know, the being able to sing out, the writing was always there. And yes, it was easy for me. And I wanted words to be beautiful, and I wanted words to carry me away, and I wanted words to change the circumstances. I was always encouraged to write, always encouraged by my mother to write, even when there was not much else going on that was good. And so I stayed with that. And I have all of these old journals that just sound like, you know, these angsty, like, you read them and you go, oh boy, I was in a place, you know?
Yeah.
But I started to write songs when I was, probably about 15 is when I started. You know, all of a sudden I was around all this music, and music was like a language that people were speaking. Mm-hmm. And it was a place that I felt safe. And so I started writing these little songs, poems, you know, that I wanted to be songs, but I had a very unusual singing voice and I didn't even necessarily fit into the bluegrass genre. So I hid those songs away for a really long time. I mean, people knew I was writing, but they didn't know I was writing those kinds of things.
I love that story because to me, it's just so beautiful how your songwriting voice now that we get to enjoy as you continue to flourish,
yeah,
your voice began on paper.
Yes, it did.
Yes. And then through that process, you over time gained the confidence, that voice gained the confidence,
yeah,
to become vocal.
Yeah. I think ultimately I was in a very large healing process when I started to actually sing them. But all I really wanted was for someone to hear them, like, because it was my heart. And so I just wanted like someone who loved me to hear my heart. And so I would be forced to kind of sing it so that you'd understand what the melody was and so that you'd understand the words. And I was sending these little voice memos with me just singing.
Aww.
Really raw and really like, you know, rough. And I'd send them to my best friend and say, just listen to this, because it meant so much to me. You know, it wasn't about anyone else. It was like, this is me, or this is something that's coming alive in me. I didn't trust my voice at that time, though. I didn't trust my voice at all. You know, I had never been told it was beautiful. I didn't know that I could use it in this way. And so that was just the means to an end. Like, how can I get this out of me, and how can I give this to you so that you know me better? And yeah, so the voice came later in many ways.
It's making me think about what your parents must be thinking about the blossoming of you as a person and as a musician. So what have they said to you as they've watched you flower, basically?
It's a pretty powerful, I get a little teary-eyed even thinking of that, because it's pretty powerful. I think that they, you know, I was going to them at certain points saying, I wrote this song, you know, and they're musicians, they're both musicians, you know, and they're also pastors of a church in a holler in Elkton.
Nice.
And my music is a little dark, right? So I'd be sharing these songs. I'm probably oversharing, and I just didn't have enough places to push it into or enough people who cared, you know, who are you going to send these songs for no reason to? And so I did that for a long time, where I was just sending it to them and just wanting that approval that every kid wants.
Yes.
This, I wanted it around music. And, you know, I kept pressing into those places, and I'd go to my dad and I'd say, you know, listen to this. And I'd play him something. He can play the banjo and he can play the guitar too. So we'd, you know, be sharing something like that. And, you know, he would always encourage me in this mountain music way. But it wasn't until things exploded for me, which is really how it happened. I recorded something because I won a raffle to record something locally. I went in and recorded two songs. My friends came in and helped me. I could hardly move my hands. I was so nervous.
Oh my God.
I'd never done anything like that. I didn't know. But it was an opportunity, and it didn't cost anything, and it wasn't for anything. And I had those two songs out, and eventually I was heard by someone who would sweep in and really heard my voice and really heard a story that he wanted to help put out into the world. So recently I had a show that I was able to invite my parents to. It was a sold out show. They weren't even convinced they were coming. You know, it's like, how did I explain who I had been and who I had become over like a 2-year period to people who music is just every day? It's just what you do. And, you know, so I'd say, are you guys going to come to the show? And they're like, you know, maybe. I mean, like, they just didn't know, you know? And so I was like, this is really important to me. I really, really want you to be there. I want to give you these tickets for the front row. I want you to see me change into this butterfly, you know? And like, and it wasn't, that's not how we talked about it, but they showed up. And I think they were nervous. I think that, you know, my mom looked pretty nervous and my dad looked pretty nervous, and it was a lot of people for them to be around, and it was a lot of people they didn't know, and it was a big stage, and they had no idea if I was about to fall flat on my face. I mean, they didn't know. They were going to love me through whatever was about to happen. But I had gotten a grant through Harrisonburg Downtown Renaissance. That's not exactly the right thing. But the Arts Council is.
There you go. Great.
And that's
I right. knew what you meant, Corey.
Thank you. And so I had this show I could put on, and, you know, I worked really hard to let people know about the show, and I worked really hard to beg my friends and family to show up to this thing. And so there were my parents, and I did the show, and I could literally see my mom go from being really nervous the first two songs to like this calming part of her body. And then I did this song that I was really worried that they would hear, which was called Angel's Teeth, which is a really hard song around the religious aspects of how I grew up. And in a time that I was really rejecting that and really confused about some of that. And I had written the song and I sang it. And, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but after I sang it, I said to the audience, like, okay, so most of you here know that I've had a struggle with my faith, and most of the people there did. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to sing this song. And at the time that I wrote it, this is how I was feeling. And my stepdad yelled out, "That's okay. God can handle it." And it was like permission, you know, it was like permission to sing it, really sing it how I felt it. And then when it was over, I only know this in hindsight, my mom turned to my best friend who was in the audience and said, "Wow, that was a really good song." That was a really good song. And from that point, all that I was doing, they were there with me. They were there talking to me in the audience. You know, they were there sharing in this like incredible experience that I was getting to have, surrounded by the most amazing musicians that you could imagine, and being held up by the whole town. You know, the whole town came out to make sure that I felt like I was able to do this and deliver it. And I think I did. And so after the show, my parents were the first people on the stage, and they were like, "We can't believe it. You know, we can't believe it." And they were just totally in shock, I think. And they were so proud of me. And they were just over the moon. And later, eventually, I got onto the outside of the show where everyone was buying my merchandise. And there are my parents buying CDs.
That's awesome.
And I'm saying, "Oh my God, you guys don't have to buy that. Like, I'll give you one of those." Like, "Oh my God." And they're like, no. "We want to buy these. We want to support you. We're buying these." Right. So that's what my parents buying the CDs was like, this thing, because it's like, that was how they were showing me. Like, yes. And then even the next day they sent me a message and said, we were in total shock and we just can't wait to see where you go, you know? And so it was from like 0 to 100, you know, and it, overnight really.
That's such an amazing story. And I love how supportive your mom and dad are. It's just incredible.
Yeah. 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 Now that they know that there's something to support. For a while, they were like, what do you mean you have a show?
I like how earlier you were saying they're going to come out and support me, whatever it was going to be like. They're sitting there praying.
Right. Know? They were. I swear they look like
their heart.
This poor girl is getting ready to, she's getting ready to fall flat, but we'll be here for her.
Probably whispering in each other's ears. This could be a disaster, but we're going to tell her we love her.
And you know, the amount of love that was in that audience, I think that's another thing that they couldn't deny. You know, it was just this outpouring from me to the audience, from the audience to me. I could see my parents like look around, you know, when people would cheer, and just, you know, it was just an incredible thing. I'll probably never get to have an experience that's that authentic again with them. It was really, really special.
That is really special. Yeah. That was the sold out audience for the grant you got with the Arts Council of the Valley through Harrisonburg and Rockingham County.
Yeah.
And it was to perform your Appalachian story, which you're speaking on a bit there. So when you say the whole town came out, you mean that rural Appalachia town you came from when you say
that? Yeah. I mean, I would say it was just everyone who had really had any impact on my life or who had ever really wanted to see me come alive in this way. I mean, I think people had really watched me grow up and in all my struggles. And I think it was sort of a redemption story. And, you know, I had been through a lot and I think people wanted to see someone win.
Yeah.
You know, and it was the whole town. So it was people from my bluegrass community. It was my bluegrass musicians who weren't actually on the stage with me, because it was the session musicians that I had made an album with that were on the stage with me. It was my fourth grade teacher was there.
That's great.
I mean, it was that kind of show where it was like, I would go out and see people that I hadn't seen in a long time. And they showed up, you know, they just showed up to, I think, to give me that gift. And it was a gift. It was a gift. And it really launched me into this, like, you can do it. And the response too, like, you can do it. We're here to watch you do it, you know, which I had never had an experience like that before.
And that's a beautiful experience. What went into your preparation for this event?
So much happened to make that the event possible. And I had a tremendous amount of support from the producer who had found me. His name is Doug Fern, or most people know him as D.W. Fern. I had been working and my job was shut down for the pandemic. A mutual friend from Harrisonburg had been working with the producer on other things that weren't related to music. She went to his home to discover that he had this incredible music studio. And as it turned out, he had had this whole, you know, music life where he was a producer and sound engineer, and also had created his own sound recording equipment that's highly coveted and used by all the greats. Mm. And so he was someone known, and he was, you know, just working with a few artists a year, just artists that he wanted to work with. And that friend said, "I have something you need to hear," which he hears a million times, and he's learned how to be very polite and listen and then just move forward, which was his plan. And then she played one of those songs from that raffle ticket, Blue Sprocket sound.
No way.
I only had two songs. It was the two songs. I'd put them on YouTube. My friends would listen to them. My family, that was it. I didn't do anything else with music, but it was like two things happened at the same time, two miracles at the same time. I'll never know why she played in that song. It's not like we had discussed that song or, you know what I mean? It's a miracle. And then the secondary thing was the pandemic shut my job down. So now I'm at home with a daughter. I had, you know, come out of a really difficult experience with breast cancer, and I had just gotten back to work, and then the pandemic came. And so I had learned how to let go with the breast cancer, like let go of everything that I thought my life was and embrace what was actually happening to me. And then as I was getting back on my feet, the pandemic hit, and I felt like I kind of lost everything again, but I was more prepared for that. I was more prepared. I understood what letting go looked like. So I just kind of let go. And in that time I was scared, bored, and had time on my hands for the first time ever. And so I was starting to put the songs I was writing onto my social media, like just for my friends, like we're all hurting. I wrote this song about it. And that was really scary, and I really didn't know what I was doing. And then at the same time, this guy was contacting me through email saying, "Hey, I just heard this song and I want to record this one song called Blow Away. And do you have any interest in doing that?" And I'm like, "Yeah,
I do." Thought you'd never ask.
Yeah, I do. You know, it's the middle of this pandemic and we didn't know what was going on and we couldn't get together. And yeah. And then I was being warned that, like, you know, there's all these scammy stuff that goes on with music and you got to be really careful. Mm-hmm. And so we were getting to know each other via email, and we were getting to know each other, and we were, you know, and he was really interested in recording that song, but time was sort of slipping away from us, and it felt like maybe it was going to slip through my hands. Mm. But he would check in every now and again. And, you know, at some point I just said, you know, basically, "Is this for real? Because, like, I don't have any money because I don't have a job," you know? And he was like, "Oh, no, it's nothing like that. Like, it's not like that," you know? And eventually I made it up there, to Pennsylvania to record in his amazing studio with his amazing equipment that only, if you're very, very lucky, do you get an opportunity to record with equipment like that. And, you know, I was totally swept away by everything. I mean, it was completely overwhelming. I was meeting, session musicians. I was scared all of the time. I was scared to go up there. I was scared to really meet with him. I thought I would be found out as the imposter that I am. You know, I thought all the things like that. Okay. Yeah. He didn't find me out, but now the session musicians are going to realize, you know, that I'm not actually a musician and that I don't actually belong here, and I'm going to sink. But it really was a sink or swim. It was like somehow he spent a ton of time kind of teaching me everything. How do you sing into a microphone? Mm. You know, how do you do this differently? Or how do you listen for exactly what it is you wanted this song to be? And so over time, I've had the incredible experience of recording with him and learning how to record and learning what it looks like to record in the studio. And he basically took me through a year-long process of, once he found out there was more than one song that he liked.
Ah, there we go.
he decided that, you know, he would invest in me and help me make an album if I wanted to. And of course I said, yeah,
I want to. Yes.
That's the coolest thing ever, you know, and it really is the coolest thing ever. And so, you know, I start on that journey and I start talking about that journey and I start going up there and I start recording with these guys and I start, I mean, and I'm nervous and, but every door that opened, I just said, yes, 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 yes. And I walked through it and it was all happening and it was all real, you know, and I was learning all along the way. And then I found out about, the grant and the Arts Council in our area, Harrisonburg, Rockingham County, gives art grants, which it, even if you look at all these other towns, this is very unique and very special. And so I thought, well, I'm going to have this album coming out and I've done everything away from home. How would it be if I brought it home? You know, if I brought it home and I had my first show with my friends and my family, like, how would that be? And so I applied for the grant and I ended up getting the grant, which allowed me to get the space at Court Square. But there was another problem, which was I was also not a performer. So all that same year, I'm like getting in front of audiences and it was terrifying. And I had really serious stage fright for a long time. And, you know, but over time that got, that eased up and got better and better and better. And by the time I got to the Court Square show, which took, you know, 8 months to create and decide what we were going to do and get merchandise to be able to sell. I mean, up to the very last minute, and ask those session musicians if they would be willing to come all the way down here and help me recreate the album. And, you know, so it took me a long time. It took me 2 years total from the minute I met Doug to creating an album from scratch with somebody who'd never done anything like that before, to getting to a sold out show in Harrisonburg, Virginia. So
that is so mega cool. And these musicians, did they come, they came down from Philadelphia?
They did me the biggest favor ever. And, you know, and this is very unusual because they make music for a living and they make money making music. And I could only give them the amount of money of tickets that I sold. So again, another way in which the town showed up for me, it was never going to be about me receiving money. It was always going to be about how much can I pay them, because they're used to getting a lot more money than I was even able to do, even in that small setting. But I think that they just wanted to see me through the journey. They had seen me through it all while we were creating this album, all the mistakes and all the things I didn't know. Nobody ever made me feel less than anything. Ultimately, I was the creator of the songs, and they knew how to make these beautiful sounds to just elevate those lyrics and to like have them linger there. And, you know, we made mistakes together and I learned things with them, but they never made me feel like I didn't belong there, which was an amazing gift. And then, yeah, they came all the way down here to do this thing. And, you know, I just hope that the experience that they had of our town being so enthusiastic was as good for them and worth it for them as it was for me, because it was a real gift.
This is a total gift. I imagine Doug Fern made it to this event.
Yes, he did. And okay. I'm so thankful for that too. And also, without him kind of saying to the guys, hey, would you have any interest in coming down and doing this show? I don't think I would have ever asked the guys that. I mean, I would have just not known that was a possibility. So as always, I mean, he is always setting me up for success. And also, it was really important for him to be there. And also another sound engineer that he works with, Ian Alexander, they came down and, you know, they made sure that the sound was what they wanted it to be, working with the sound guy at Court Square Theater. And, you know, their ears are like really on high alert because they had created the music and they knew exactly what they wanted it to sound like. And they had the musicians they wanted. And the question was, could they make it come out into this theater? And, you know, I think that went really well. But yeah, he was there the whole way. And he's been there for every major moment that I've had, and in total support and just rolling out the red carpet for me all the way.
That's pretty incredible. So is he behind helping you get this album Blow Away in a vinyl format also?
100%. Most people who are in my position never get to have a vinyl album. You know, you have to be selling a lot of merchandise in order to make something like that happen. He has some friends. Well, he has lots of friends in the industry, and some of his friends had created a record pressing plant up where he lives. And so he was able to, you know, talk to them and see what that would look like to have some albums made. And, you know, usually you have to order a lot, but we were able to order a really reasonable amount. And, you know, we're both trying to figure out, you know, CDs are kind of the dinosaur of the industry now. Like, so we have some CDs for people who are still listening to music that way. Lots of people are streaming, but lots of people are now going back to vinyl. I'm a vinyl collector and have been since I was really young. Records were always just this fascinating, interesting thing to me. And I've kind of carried that through. So I have my own collection. So to have my face on a vinyl is really incredible for me as a vinyl collector. And we're going to see how people respond to having access to that. But there's been a lot of enthusiasm so far.
A vinyl collector. I heard that. What do you have collected, Miss Corey?
I've got all kinds of records. My newer records are things, just shows I've gone to, and now I don't buy CDs, so I'll always buy an album, a vinyl album. The Watch House, which was the formerly Mandolin Orange, I just bought their album. I have the new May Early Wine album, and that's just beautifully written. She's a wonderful songwriter. And then I have a Langhorne Slim album, and Langhorne is somebody I saw in concert and was like, I've never heard of this person. Everybody knows the words to his music. And I bought one of those albums. But I also have Kenny Rogers.
Yes.
You know, I also have almost every Dolly Parton album that you could ever imagine.
Yes.
I have weird, 90s nostalgia albums and 80s albums. I have The Police.
The Police.
And I have all kinds of bluegrass albums, that remind me of where I'm from and remind me of my family and the things we listened to growing up.
That's incredible. We had vinyl records in the house we lived in before this. Of course, most of those for me were comedy albums.
I had comedy albums too. And I also had story albums. And I even remember, I will not be able to remember what this was, but I remember we had this family album that was sort of this, it was some sort of like Christian comedy guy. And I can remember my brothers and sisters and I would just sit around laughing and laughing. And this guy did songs too. And there was something like, I think one of the songs was called like A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to Hell. I got saved, saved, saved. And I don't even know why I remember that, but like, you know, like this. So lots of stories were on records, lots of like kids stories.
McGraw, or am I getting him confused? Tim McGraw.
Oh, it definitely was. I mean, this was old. Like this was something when I was a kid we were listening to. You know, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Hell. I got saved, saved, saved. That's all I can remember. And I have no idea who it was or what it was, but it was, you know, just an album we had, a record where there was talk and then there was music and, you know.
you got all kinds of music you're collecting with and these vinyl albums.
I never heard any music that I didn't like. I mean, there's music that I prefer, but I think creating music, especially now that even post album, have the ability to Doug gives me the opportunity to make any music that I want to make. The next song that I have coming out on November 18th is incredibly different. And I just ask that the listeners listen to the whole thing, because there's me singing this song about a friend of mine who was going through divorce at the time that I wrote it. And it sounds like me, and you get through the verse and it's lots of words, and then you get to the chorus and it's just like this. Oh, but man, you get to the second verse and the third verse and we go to a completely different space. And when you hear that, you will know how much influence I have in it, because it goes from my Appalachian route all the way back. And it really changes tempo and really does some exciting things. And it's going to be something really different. And the thing is, I don't have to write music or make music just because you like it. I get to go in and actually create something, you know? And now I realize, well, that's what all these amazing musicians are doing. They're going in and they're not trying to be like anybody else. And it might be amazing and it might fail, but they've been true to this sort of artistic principle and they've been able to create something that had never been created before. I love that idea. So that's coming out November 18th. And then I'm going up to record on December 2nd. And they're bringing in like an 18th century harpsichord for the next recording. So just any weird different thing you can think of, and how can we make this something that we've never heard before, and how does it fit, and what do we want to do? Sky's the limit.
The sky is the limit with your multi-talented self.
Yeah.
Yes. And it starts with your process, your music writing process. That's where your voice started.
Yeah.
Was in that element.
Yeah.
And I want to know, as you have beginning to really flourish here.
Yeah.
What has your process been like and how has it evolved over time?
So my process was originally just, you know, I would hear a melody in my mind, or I would hear a phrase, you know, something that sounded like, oh, that'd be a great ending to a song, you know, or that'd be a great chorus hook. You know, I could pick those out really easily in language. And so my process was, you know, maybe a little embarrassing. I would fall asleep and wake up at 3 a.m. and I would have a song going, melody, lyrics, fast. If I was awake enough, I would record it on my voice memo immediately, because if I didn't, it'd be gone. So they don't stay. They don't stay with me. Sometimes if I didn't have the opportunity to voice memo, I'd try to repeat it in my head and repeat it in my head and repeat. And I'd think, there's no way I'll lose this melody. It's too good. But I wake up the next day and it would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to get up in the middle of the night if that's when it hit me. And so I would always create almost an entire song without ever picking up an instrument, which is unusual. The songs lived in my mind, you know, the melodies lived in my mind, the lyrics lived in my mind. And it was sort of like magic for a really long time. And then I would go get my instrument, which was the banjo, and I would sort out what the melody was according to that. And then I would put it all together and then I would record it all and then I'd have a song. And that's changed because I've learned so much. You know, I can get through the process a bunch of different ways now. So that still happens to me regularly. And all the really good songs with the really good lyrics, they're the ones that just come into my head like a lightning bolt. I wrote a song called Earth to Nora. If you've heard that song, which is on the Blow Away album, it's lyrically really sound. And the lyrics are written about a loss in our community of a young person. But it's the loss any of us may have, you know, experienced. And I wrote that song in 10 minutes. You know, I found out about the loss and that song came like a lightning bolt. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote it down and there it was. And there was the song. But now, you know, I need to write songs. I'm getting ready to go back into the studio and I have about 3 albums worth of songs. We'll never run out of songs. I did all that writing before I ever knew what I was writing for. Mm. So I have some amazing songs, but I've grown and I've changed through the experience itself of making music and learning. And so I found myself becoming a little bored with these old songs, you know, that, yeah, I can record them and I'll have an album. But I was changing both as a musician and as an artist and as a human. And so I wanted the opportunity to write some new songs and Doug ended up giving me that space and that time. And then I wondered, can I still write? I mean, I'd never had pressure on, you know, and I'd never had anything like that. And at first it was a little, you know, doing all the musicality stuff and doing the show and promoting the album, I was only playing that stuff forever. So coming back to writing was like, you know, it was like I had turned off a faucet and I didn't know if I could turn it back on. So I tried, and I basically just spent like 2 months just writing. And I spent time making melodies with my banjo and seeing if I could bring lyrics to that. So trying to do it differently and seeing if I could change or if there were more ways that it could come. And at first they were really, you know, chunky, not great. I wouldn't, you know, how am I ever going to get back? But over time, I just think that I had a slow leak, you know, I was turning it back on and I was turning it back on and then it was back on. And so I'm back in a writing process now, and I don't want to turn it off because it scares me to turn it off. But I got one good song out, and that's going to be the one that we'll record in December. And then it was on, you know, it's like, I got that one song out, and then it was just like, okay, you did it. And here's another one, and here's another one, and here's another one. So for me, there's just something very, not easy necessarily, but there's just something, there's just still more I want to say. And so it keeps coming.
I love a lot about what you shared there. And most notably, just you got to write it down, yeah. You know, or you got to use the voice memo or something as soon as it comes in your head. Comedians go through that too. And my husband's a comedian also. So yeah, we experience life and we see Lynn's in as comics.
Yes.
And we observe things that are funny and we'll crack each other up. And oftentimes one or the other of us is saying, as soon as that observation happens, we look at each other, write it down. And so I got a joke note folder in my phone.
Yeah.
Just keep away, because you have your phone on you all the time. Just a way to, even if you write a couple of notes, just to jog your memory.
Yeah.
Then you can go back later and pull that up. Oh, you got the dogs too?
Yeah, I think the dogs came back. Hopefully my husband will hear that and make them go away.
Oh, Doug Fern, this is not a sound studio like yours.
Yeah, right, exactly.
We got dogs in the background. We got husbands coming in. My husband turned on the faucet upstairs at some point. So you got the dink, dink, dink on the ceiling. It's been,
my dogs have a special, I'm writing my husband a little note, get dogs is what it says.
Laughers, bear with us. We are doing life as we
That's
podcast
right.
interview
right.
on
and
this
we have
soon.
Dogs. We're dog lovers. I'm really careful about the process because I know I've lost some songs. And I remember reading a book before that was talking about how, like, it's kind of like a thing, like a song comes down and gets into your head. And if you don't take it, it's like magic. It's yours. It's being given to you. And if you don't take it, it's going to go back out into the world and then it's going to land for whoever's like ready to receive it.
Yeah.
So take it because it's yours. And if you don't, it'll be gone and it will reemerge in someone else's brain and someone else's spirit and someone else's like musicality. And so take it.
Take it. That's what I say. I like that. It's really great. You mentioned earlier that you've definitely been through some stuff and some hard stuff.
Yeah.
And at 40, you mentioned, you didn't say 40, but you did talk about the breast cancer, but that's when it happened. How did this experience and going through this tough time impact your music career and your view on life?
So I think it impacted everything, and it impacted the music because it put me in a space of, I think when you go through something like that, and I had, you know, a very serious situation, a very aggressive cancer. And, I just didn't know if I was going to live or die. I mean, those were the facts of it. And, I think when I lived, when I survived and thrived, I just wasn't going to be afraid of anything anymore. And I think I was really afraid of my voice for all kinds of reasons. I mean, I was a peacemaker. I was a person who didn't who would make nice, you know? And I think that I didn't trust my own voice. I didn't trust my own confidence. And I have lots of confidence, but I didn't trust it. You know, it was like, I didn't say to myself, it's okay for you to be glad to be you. And it's okay for you to express yourself in this way that may be judged by others. You know, I like to say I didn't care what people think, but I think I did. I mean, in this really like deep way, I wanted to be liked. I wanted to be loved. And so I put a cap on what was authentic about me, just living my life that way. And I think I was afraid to be, I was afraid that people wouldn't understand who I was, you know? And so I didn't sing. And so when I got through the experience, you know, I felt young. I was diagnosed with my first mammogram, you know, it's just a really hard thing because I just had no expectation of anything like that at that point in my life. But as I went through treatment and stopped fighting so much, you hear the word fight, fight, fight. I realized like you don't win or lose. It's not a battle. Like you're not going to win and you're not going to lose. You don't have any control over that part of it, in my opinion. But there was something I hadn't done my whole life or within that experience. And that was like to just kind of surrender to the experience itself. To just kind of sit back and watch and witness, hey, this is hard. This is hard on my body. This is hard on my family. I'm in pain, you know? And with that surrender, with that sort of like allowing myself just to be present with what was really happening to me and be, you know, getting to know like what it means to live in a moment where you don't know what the future holds. I started to feel things more deeply and more authentically and more, and in a crisper way. And everything just sort of had this light around it at some point, you know, this sort of like, you're alive. We're all alive. And none of us know. I mean, that's the bottom line, but my God, you're alive. And like, if you live through this, be alive, be totally alive. You know what I mean? Don't let anyone or anything steal this joy you have that pours out of you, this light, you know, that exists within you. Don't be afraid to use your voice and tell people your words and sing your songs and embarrass yourself and not be ready and be off key and mess up. And have your dogs bark in the podcast. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. Mine did it earlier.
It's just like, don't be afraid of being a human.
Yes.
And like, live. And what do you want to do? And so after that, it informed everything because it was like, do not be afraid to sing. Do not be afraid. Nothing is scarier than that. Nothing is scarier than thinking about your own mortality or not knowing if you got to leave your daughter or not. There's nothing scarier than that. So you better sing. Now's the time. So it informed everything and it changed me completely. And it allowed me to be brave both then and now. I still feel scared when I walk through doors that I have never walked through before. I still feel a sense of like, do I belong here? Am I good enough to be here? How did I get here? But I just say, yes. You're here for a reason. You're here for a reason. You have a story to tell that no one else has. It's yours. We all have our own unique story. So you have a story to tell. Go tell it. Go tell it. And leave behind a legacy for your daughter and a legacy for yourself. And tell your story and be you and just be at peace with that. And that's that story.
You know, that is a tremendous gift that hardship gave you.
It was a gift. It was a gift. I just recently gave a speech about it. And that was what it was. The gifts of cancer.
Yeah. You know,
if you get to survive, and there are a lot of hardships too, but even in that experience, when you're in it, can you live a life even inside it, even if the outcome isn't what you thought it was going to be? My surgeons used to say to me, everything's going to be all right. It really is. Everything's going to be okay. And I would think, you don't know that. You don't know anything. And later I realized that's not what she meant. She meant everything is going to be okay no matter what. No matter what happens, everything's going to be okay. And she was right about that, no matter what. So there's more, you know, and it's going to be okay, whatever the outcome. And so there's another big lesson, right? So yeah, I don't have to be afraid of anything.
Yeah, it's really amazing that you're sharing that. You know, I've been on a healing and therapy journey myself this last few years, and learning how to make meaning of the hardship. It's a hardship. There's a value in it in terms of what it can teach you about yourself.
Yeah.
And create gifts like your hardship created for you, where you gained bravery in that hardship. And now we have this beautiful music because.
I don't think it would be otherwise. I just don't think it would have, not like this, not this rocket ship, you know, of like, oh, you're going to go record and you're going to go do all these amazing things. And just out of nowhere, I just don't think it could happen without that experience. So I'm grateful to it. I'm grateful to it.
And I like how you're embracing the messiness of human.
Yes.
We go through hard stuff or been through traumas, and we all been through trauma the last few years with this pandemic. Everyone's been touched.
Yes.
You can tend to struggle with perfectionism. I can't put it out there unless it's perfect, or I can't do that unless it's perfect. And letting that go and just embracing.
And just saying like, I think this song is good enough.
It's good enough. That's right.
Want to hear it and you can tell me what you think, right? I mean, just like letting go of all of the, I think it allows more space for more creativity and more writing, and they're not all going to be number one hits, but maybe one will, right? And
that's right.
It's just good enough.
And just write that joke.
Yeah, that's right. That feels a lot harder to me, but you might feel the reverse.
I feel the reverse, sister. I totally feel the absolute reverse about that. I'll write jokes all day. Oh my gosh. That'd be funny to sit down with a songwriter and a joke writer. I don't even know if anybody's done that. So
it's a good idea.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out sometime. Well, 2022 has been a really big year for you. Definitely highlights, including the national recognition, placing third in the 2022 Tucson Folk Festival songwriting competition. Okay, we just talked about this. I wouldn't even begin to know how to write a song. And I wonder, how do songwriting competitions work exactly?
It's such a good question, and no one's ever asked me that question. And I think it's just really important because it's a wild thing and it's not for everybody. Okay. And so no one's ever asked me about this thing. So it's craziness. You have to be crazy because you're putting it out there, and it's songwriting is so subjective. Do you like my weird voice and my Appalachian folk song, you know, compared to this guy over here, compared to this girl over here. Yeah. And so that opportunity came up, and I thought, there's no way I'll get anywhere, but I also have nothing to lose. Like, there's no ego in it for me. I mean, I'll just lose it, you know, but I had the opportunity, an opportunity arose to put it in there, and it was a good opportunity. And so I put it in there, and I was told only, you know, 20% of people who make it do so outside of Tucson. So it's mostly the state. And so I'm just thinking, I'll throw it in there, and that's fun. And that's giving, you know, giving me something to like aim toward. And, you know, it went from however many people to however many people to 50 people to 20 people to like 10 people. And I was in the top 10, which meant I had to fly out there and compete. Mm-hmm. And I had no, I mean, I was just like, oh, I wasn't expecting to actually have to do anything, right? To fly to Tucson. But I'm like, I'm going to do it. What an opportunity. And I go out there, and it's sort of funny because I go out there, I don't have a clue. I mean, I'm in the green room. I'm just so excited to be in a green room. I can't believe I'm in a green room. Right? and then I start to meet the other competitors. And what I realize is, oh, the people who are competing, they do this. They compete. That's what they do. And it gives you national recognition, and it sort of launches your career if you are any good at it. And so these artists start coming up to me, and they're like, hi, you know, I'm whoever. Like, who are you? And I'd be like, you know, I'm Cori Lynn Green, and I'm from the Appalachian Mountains of Virginia. And then they'd be like, Cori Lynn Green, never heard of you. Oh, yes. Because it was actually a competition like any sport. And I just was so excited to be there. I was in the top 10. I was going to put that on my resume. Like, I'm in the top 10. Like, I didn't need a thing else. And so, you know, these people are going around doing contests that they get into, and it helps get their career launched. And having a music career is just insane, and it's just almost impossible. So it's a way to do it. And so all the vulnerabilities and all the competitiveness that you can imagine exists there too. So you're under this pressure, and all of a sudden I realized, like, oh, I don't belong here. This is serious, you know? And when I went on stage, you know, you get a chance to play three songs, and then it's judged by a panel, and there were 400 people watching. I'd never even played in front of an audience that was that large. And right before I went on stage, one of my banjo strings went out of tune, and I couldn't get it back in tune. I'm behind in the dark with a banjo that won't go into tune. And I think from the heat and the traveling, a screw had come loose. I mean, you know, anyway, I sorted it out last minute, barely. And I'm shaking from my head to my feet. And I went out with this banjo that was just barely in tune and cranked out these songs and thought, I'm going home. Like, that's it. But I did it. I was brave, and I showed up, and I did something I've never done before. And, you know, I got third place, which, I mean, if you wanted to watch me hear my name get called, there's only three prizes, 1, 2, and 3. So I hear my name get called first. I stand up, I sit down. I stand up, I sit down. I stand up, I sit down. It's like, I can't believe that I heard my name. It doesn't seem right. So
maybe it is. Maybe it's not.
It's just crazy. And so, but I will say that there's something about it that I like. Yeah. I have some songs now in a songwriting contest in the UK. I'm waiting to hear like one of the lyric contests is in the semifinals. I'm waiting to hear about two other songs to see if they make it. And if they make it there, they go to the finals. And if they make it there, who knows what? But it's also like millions of people putting their songs in. Now, at least there's categories with this. And so you're just kind of waiting, and it's subjective. And so is everything that you do when you're putting music out there. Like, will you add me to your Spotify playlist? Oh, you don't like me. I'm not quite what you're looking for. So it's like a lot of rejection. Mm. And then every once in a while you get an ace in the hole. And like me getting third place, being a virtual unknown in the middle of Tucson with a broken down banjo, it just was like this miracle in a whole series of miracles that was happening for me at the same time, you know, with the album coming out and the opportunity to go out there. And so this just allowed people to see me and to go, let's hear what these songs are about, because there's something there. And so I'm really grateful to it and thankful for it. And I've applied again for the same one, because now I'm like, okay, I'm a much stronger, more capable, experienced musician.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a great songwriter, but I'm actually could perform these songs this time. You know what I mean? I could actually like deliver. I was very nervous at that one. I mean, my voice was shaking, my hands were, you know.
Yeah, so the whole thing.
Maybe I have to go back and like redeem that part of it. But yeah, so that's what it's like. It's different than just putting your music into the world, which also has tons of rejection. but it's this, it's way more, it's like a sport. Like people are, people want to win and they're putting it out there. And I just thought we were all going to like walk arm in arm.
Sing
kumbaya and be so proud of ourselves.
Tribe, you know, wrong.
Yeah, we're here, we've done this. And there was some of that too. There was some of that too. But there was also some of the other like, oh, you play in Nashville? Oh, you're a seasoned you do competitions for a living?
Oh, you have a residency in Las Vegas.
right. Yeah.
And I mentioned I was from rural Appalachia.
Right, exactly. No experience, don't know what I'm doing here, don't know how I got in.
So when you're submitting these songs, is it, it's not audio, it's on paper?
It is audio. Yeah. Okay. So the process of what you do is you usually fill out some kind of form where you're saying who you are, what kind of music you're submitting. And I try to go for, I mean, I entered into a folk festival. Right. And I had been before that been entering stuff into bluegrass festivals to which I got nada because it was the wrong genre. So figuring out your genre and then writing toward that and then sending the stuff that way. And then you have to send in usually two or three songs to which they'll evaluate the quality of. And they're generally not looking for, like, you don't have to have a producer. They're not looking for this amazingly produced song. They might not even be looking for lyrics. For vocals. They may just be looking for really incredible lyrics. But what I have found is having all those other parts, pretty good vocals, really great lyrics, and having the production be not half bad works in your favor because they're trying to do it based on lyrics alone, but it's hard to like beat a song that you're like is all put together, right? Where you're like, oh, that just sounds so good. And those lyrics are so good. You hear it more. So you don't have to have those things, but it doesn't hurt to have them. And of course I was in a position to have them, but when I applied for the Tucson one, it was the original raffle ticket songs. I didn't have the album yet. So it was those original songs, recorded by Blue Sprocket Sound, which was another amazing sound recording, company. Yeah, those songs live in infamy because they got me to Doug and then they also got me to that contest.
That's really incredible. You've got some good things coming up, friend. Yes. Got some good things coming up. You mentioned a little bit about the event at the Forbes Center, kind of talking about the different kind of music pieces coming in. But you are featuring five female singer songwriters at this event. Super exciting.
Yeah,
super
this is a really exciting event. The Forbes Center is just a dream place to be able to go play. I mean, I couldn't really imagine getting there this quickly. So I'm super, super excited and honored and filled with gratitude. But it's called the Songstress Sojourn. And so it's five singer, songwriter, all women coming together on the stage. We all get to perform, you know, three songs for ourselves. It will be recorded by WMRA, our local NPR affiliate. And played live on the station, and then at the end, I think we all come together and get to sing a song together. And so, just looking at these other incredible artists that I can look up to, that probably have a lot to teach me, and to be on a stage of that caliber just feels, and in a place where it's not just me and the pressure is not just on me, but us, you know, collectively. Just feels like something really special, and I'm really excited about having that opportunity. And then on December 30th, I'll be back at Court Square, and that will be my last show for a really long time. I'm doing that. I just want to see if I can do it one more time. And I'm going to do that with the band that I play with locally. I feel like they deserve to have that opportunity with me. They've seen me through a lot of musical change and they've taught me a tremendous amount. And, you know, the question is, will we be able to get the support and have people come back out and really see us through one more phase? I feel like if we are able to do that, then it's kind of the last time when we have to ask ourselves that question, right? Because we've done it and we did it at Oak Grove and we did it at Court Square originally. And so if we have that kind of support this time around, we can kind of like lay 2022 down. You know, we've done it. We've accomplished all these amazing things and we can just be so proud. And going into 2023, I'll be in the studio a lot more. So I'll be kind of pulling back from live performances and then really working on the songs themselves, possibly to get another album down since we have good forward momentum. And then I'll be applying to festivals and stuff like that for the summer of 2023. And I'm already in that process as well. So that's where I'm aiming toward. And so if you're, you know, living in this area, these are the times to come see me. At Forbes, I'll be on my own, just me and my lyrics and my rawness. And at Court Square, it'll be me and my band, amazing violin player, mandolin, and guitar player, and bass player. So we're going to be really excited to be there as well.
This is incredible. So laughers, you must go to our website, which we're going to tell you about in a little bit, so you can see her upcoming shows.
Yes.
Yes. And that is that the best way for laughers to get more details about where and when you will be performing?
They can go to my website and find almost anything, which is CoryLynnGreenMusic.com. And then they'll be able to see what shows I've got going on. They'll be able to see what I'm working on. I try to give updates on that. I've got lots of pictures from the shows I've been doing for 2022. They'll be able to have access to CDs or streaming links. And of course, they have access to the new vinyl record if they have interest in that.
Yeah, I have some interest in that.
Yay!
That sounds good to me.
I love it.
Well, how best can the laughers follow you on social media then?
So I'm all over the place on social media. There is Cori Lynn Green Music on Facebook. And there is Cori String Geek. I know that's weird.
String Geek.
I need to probably change that. That was from a long time ago. Cori String Geek on Instagram.
Right.
And you can find me on TikTok.
Really?
You have to, because you should be on TikTok.
That's what they keep trying to talk me into.
No, I mean, for a comedian, we'll talk about that later.
Okay, we'll talk about that another time.
We'll get together about that.
Okay, we are going to do it.
Because all these things, the more you add, the more it's like, oh, that's very overwhelming. And that's another thing I've got to learn.
Yes.
But for comedians and for musicians over there, it can catch like wildfire if it does. I haven't done that over there, but it's really an interesting platform. You can find me on almost anywhere that if you're looking for me, and even if you Google me, I'll pop right up. And I'd love to see anyone who'd like to come see me perform to come on out. But also, if you're not able to do that, even just streaming on Spotify, Amazon, it's all over the place. The album Blow Away, and you'll hear a lot of the stories that we were talking about today, and a lot of really what makes me who I am growing up in the way that I did.
That's beautiful. So beautiful. Thank you so much, Cori. This has been such a good time being with you today. I had a great time. You are so delightful and inspiring. I very much look forward to following your success. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for showing up today and being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun, and I'm so glad I got to have the opportunity.
Yay. So great. Laughers, you can follow Cori on social media. We'll put the links in the show notes for you. You can also buy her album, Blow Away, listen to her music online on her website, or even better, book her or see her perform live at an upcoming event. Be sure to visit her website at CoriGreenMusic.com. That's Cori, CoriE, Green, GREEN, music.com, to grab all the info and check her out. We'll also be sure to put that website in the show notes for you also. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.